The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Runes, the 2018 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2018. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Good morning. I think I'm going to go ahead and get started as people trickle in. I can give you a little background information to encourage you before we start. The what do we call him, Wade? The tech person was here earlier, IT guy, and he was trying to help me. I didn't understand what he was trying to help me with, and he was like, well, we've got to get your slideshow going. And I said, well, it's right here. And he just kind of smiled at me, and he was like, no, with the clicker when you're showing all the information. I'm like, oh, no, that's over here. And when I was unloading my car Tuesday for the last week, mother of four, I just kept, every time I got an idea, I was throwing it in my trunk or yelling at my kids not to throw away their Sonic cups. And I decided, you know, I better unpack my car before all these smart people get here. And so I went out to my car and had the rolling cart, and I was shoving all this because, of course, I didn't have it in boxes or bags. And I get it all in a crate, and I am hiding, and I'm walking as I'm coming in, and I see one of my counterparts. She taught my son, taught my daughter. And I look up, and I went, oh, hi. And she goes, hi. And I'm like, I'm embarrassed. And she said, no, you always look like that. And then I went a little bit further, and I was walking in to register, and I went to Miss Spencer and a couple other ladies and said, I was wondering if there's a place I could hide all this. And they said, the rubbish? And I went, yeah, the rubbish. Anyway, my name is Christina. I teach kindergarten at Providence Classical School in Spring, Texas. I also serve part-time with a ministry called Marketplace Ministries as a chaplain and provide pastoral care. I also have the joy of contracting with families as an advocate and writing IEPs and supporting them when they're in ARDS and don't know if their children are ever going to be able to learn. My favorite role in life is being a mom. I'm married to Troy. We've been married 18 years, and we have four children. Four miracles, I say. Owen is 13, adopted after 27 fertility attempts. Mackenzie Grace, who just surprised me and came, even though they said, the doctor said I couldn't have any children. And then Piper and Parker, 5 and 6, we just adopted in January. So children are my love and my passion, and if I had had it my way, I'd have 10. God is beautiful in the way he knits us together on the front row. I'm not going to look at her because I'll cry, but she held me and wept with me for years when I wanted to have children. We taught together at River Oaks Baptist, and we are full-fledged into the Kool-Aid and now teaching classical, she in Longview and me in Spring. So I am thankful to be here. Growing up, my mother was German, and we spent our summers living in Germany even after I graduated from college, and we moved most every year growing up. And there was two things I remember from my childhood. Some of you might not even know what a phone book is. However, when we would move to a new city, I remember my mom and dad getting out a phone book and looking for a Bible church with a pastor who had graduated from Dallas Theological Seminary. The second thing, immediately being European and being lonely and not really connecting with the American culture, she would tell me, remember, Scripture says, he who walks with the wise grows wise, but a companion of fools will suffer harm. And then she loved C.S. Lewis, and she would always say, the next best thing to being wise is being in a circle of wise people. So today I hope to share my personal, spiritual, and professional exploration of early childhood and pre-grammar, but I want you to know that it's not my own. It's from other wise counselors and teachers and administrators and doctors and friends, and so I'm honored and excited just to be here with you and share a few ideas. And what I want, my hope today is that I will finish early, because in that truth, in this circle of wisdom, I want to invite dialogue and allow some time at the end. Challenge what I've said, ask questions about what I've said, because I think among us we can grow together. Iron sharpens iron. So, September will be here before you know it, and you and I are going to be handed this ball of clay, a unique piece of clay that belongs to the great I Am. We have 9 months to not only train their hearts, but establish a love of learning and joy. For me, joy is building a relationship with that little person so that the work of God can thrive, not Christina's work. It's not about me, and it's not even about our curriculum. It's a desire that we should all have for wonder and wisdom in our room and not judgment and law. So what sets us apart? I've said for years, you know, kindergarten and pre-K, it really isn't classical, because if we hold to what we believe, they should be at home with mom and dad. And I've been asking this question and researching, and I think it's kind of 5 years ago I told a friend of mine at Providence, one day I just want to speak at a conference and talk about this, not because I have all the answers, but it's time that we start talking about it and figuring it out. So my first P today in your program is a pure and passionate program. So the first P is your program. Think right now about your preschool program, your kindergarten program. We're all from multiple schools, classical and Christian, across the nation. I think it's glorious. I'm not here to tell you the best phonics program or the best math program, and I'm not even here to defend Charlotte Mason, whom I love. That's an administrative decision and one that you must submit to. What I do want to encourage you today is to think and to listen to learn what we know to be true about the way God designed our brains, the way the brain works. You examine your teaching at the end of this. You examine the way your classroom looks. You examine your curriculum. And as believers and brothers and sisters in Christ, you go back and have the conversations. And you begin to cultivate that so that we can continue to grow together and figure out what this looks like. But here's what really matters to me: the science and the development of the brain of a child. I don't want this to sound like a science lesson, because it's not. But this is who the King of the universe created these children to be. Just last night, a dear friend to me said, "My gosh, Christina, they've only been on the planet 5 years. Five. Yet we treat them like they've been on it for 20. Schools today, we're at complete odds with what we believe and how the trend of education is going. We're moving to electronic textbooks when we know that the retention rate is 30 to 40% less with electronic. It's just a given fact. Horace Mann. I wonder how many of you know Horace Mann. History. We need to know our history. If you have a desk and a chair in your classroom, five or under, Horace Mann, father of common schools, Unitarian, denied the lordship of Jesus Christ, hated the Calvinist church. What he did is he came over to America, began the public school movement, put those 4 and 5 year olds in a desk and a chair, said, sit up, sit tall, put your hands flat, because I'm going to produce the most powerful workforce you've ever seen by the time they're finished. We have a tendency to think in our world that we're savvy and we're doing a good job in our teaching. And I think it's true. I think we're all doing a great job. But we spend little to no time discussing and talking about how do these little people learn? What's the best way to grow their minds and to grow their brains? As we classically educate, many think that it needs to be structured and it needs to be rigorous in order to be beautiful and classical. But we need to remember that the classical model, in its purest sense, is educating children with what they need to know when they need to know it. Christopher Perrin. Are you continually trying to cultivate the sense of wonder that leads to a love of wisdom and learning? Do you play, and yes, I say the word play, with beautiful literature and music and art and numbers and Cheerios and songs and poems and M&Ms? Do you create a longing for more? Think about what brings you joy in your life right now. Do you want more of it? Little kids do. When they love it and they enjoy it, they desire more and more. And that's what we profess we're wanting for our young people, a love of learning. young people come into our classroom in September and they are ready to roll. They are happy. They are excited. The best part of my job, honestly, is when they say, "Miss Pierce, this is the best day of my life." And then you discipline them 4 hours later, but then an hour later they tell you, "This is the greatest kindergarten class in the world." And it's true. And that's where their mind is, and that's where they grow. But the tragedy is we tend to shut them down with formalities, dictation, workbooks. I'm going to ask you, who are those things really for? Do you feel like you need proof for your parents? Do you need proof for your administration? Or does it make you feel better as a person if you have something tangible to prove that you're doing your job other than the residue of slime on your fingers? When your students come to you, I just think this is unbelievable, and I want you to think right now what I'm saying is not me and it's not science. It's the King of the universe who created this child. And when this child comes to you, their parents have been at home with them, hopefully, building this little cognitive network. I love to call it a castle. And their baby was born with these millions of neurons, and they are flying all over the place, and they're unorganized. And as children, as they take in different sensory experiences, as we as their educators provide that for them, those neurons form the synapses of their brain. And they're literally forming the cognitive network that they are going to have for the rest of our lives. How many of us have said, I say it all the time and I still believe it, but we're just a kindergarten teacher. We are laying the most foundational bricks to a forever castle for his kingdom. It's a major project that you and I are part of. I don't oftentimes think we give ourselves credit for it, and we should. I would argue that this has to be done through sensory input and not informational input. Excellent and lovely education will always, always look at the individual child and where they are. When you examine your program and look at the great things that you're doing in your room and with your team, are they working with God's natural design? Is that what motivates you? Is that what drives you? God's natural design. When we push too much formal information too early and structure, and it's across the world. I mean, kids are going to school when they're one. I mean, it's insane what is happening. The brain will work, and the brain is going to receive all the information that you shove at them, but it won't keep building its cognitive network. And when you're not using those cells and building the network, they just prune away, and they'll continue to prune away and go away all the way up until puberty. So the brain will say, okay, but at the expense of their future. When my students squish their toes in paint or shaving cream or even whipping cream when we explore the phonogram WH, I am so excited to know that one day when he sits in a rhetoric class in calculus, I worked that portion of the brain. Had he not had my whipped cream and my slime and my paint, that portion of the brain would not be where it is as he sits in that class. You and I are actually stimulating the brain the whole day, and we need to be, and if we're not, we need to be thinking why we're not. When we form phonograms in sand or salt or slime or paint, you may make the people around you nervous, or your colleagues might even think you have a really easy job, but you can let them know you're building a cognitive network that's going to last forever. If you don't stimulate, if you force this age to sit and to not explore, you're going to adversely affect their growing. Today's parents don't do these things at home. I was talking to a couple of colleagues. Our students tell us all the time when we bake or we cook or we play with slime or whatever it is that we do, we hear, "Gosh, we never get to do this at home. Oh, my mom says that's too messy. Miss Pierce, can I keep my slime here? Mom says it messes up the house." I mean, that's the reality of what these children are experiencing at home, where this is supposed to be taking place. I spoke with a colleague of mine up north. She teaches at a prominent classical school. And I said, "What's one thing that you just really wish would change?" And she said, "Christina, we had the most massive snowstorm up here this year. School was closed for 5 days. So I decided when we came back together, I was going to put everybody in a circle, and we were going to talk about our snow adventures and what you built and who had the fights. And she said not one in her class had played with the snow. It was too messy. It was too cold. They might catch a cold. Too much laundry. This is a reality. It's not made up, and it's happening within our own schools, and it's up to us to cultivate and change this. When you don't, my last little section on sensory, if you haven't read the book Balanced and Barefoot, kids are not going outside anymore. Every moment, hence this table, of every day is planned for them. We're even reaching a point in our generation where parents are asking to leave school, not go to church, because they've got these great activities they're involved in. How do we respond to that? Rules on the playground. When you read her book, Balanced and Barefoot, she's an occupational therapist. Do you have children in your room who, think about however long you've been teaching, the rise of attention deficit disorder? I know I have a couple colleagues in here who hate these things, and fidget spinners, but they claim it's going to help calm these children. Well, the reality is it's our fault they need this because we don't let them play. I have a son with those same issues, my adopted son. There's companies now. My son chews on this all day long just to survive in the classroom. But it's not his fault. We're not providing enough stimulation for these children. Raymond Moore in his book says, better late than early. You've got to read this book. It'll stir you up and fire you up, but he'll tell you that too much math, too much academics, too early will permanently damage the central nervous system. He says if you're seeing among your students anxiety, depression, tics, sleep, how many of your students and or their families have children that are in counseling by fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade? Teaching is learning, and so much learning takes place despite our teaching. Our students are not our report card. It's when we come to the place, and when I talk about we're building this castle with them, an individual kingdom versus one kingdom. It's not one kindergarten kingdom. We're his kingdom, and we're just a group of teachers building these little vessels so that one day they can go on and do his work. Parents are in a panic about reading. You read articles all the time, teaching them to read at 2, at 3, at 4. We have to stop this madness, and we have to encourage parents to stop. They have to hear that from us. There's the portion of the brain that must physically fuse together in order for you to love reading, to enjoy it, for it to be pleasant. If you force it too early, a child definitely can read. You can teach a 2, 3, 4, 5-year-old to read. However, if you do that before it is fused together, reading for them will be laborious, it will be boring, it will cause tears, it will cause frustration. If you then continue reading with your children when they come to that age where that portion of the brain fuses together, and that's usually between the ages of 5 and 9. 5 is okay, 9 is okay. We know boys tend to mature later. They will still continue reading, but their brain has been programmed to read that other way, so it will never be lovely. God provided an opportunity for me. I was passing who I would deem one of the smartest teachers at my school, and he was sitting with this other scholarly gentleman, and he said, so what are you speaking on? I was like, oh, you're too smart, I can't tell you. And then he said, no, really. And so we started talking about it a little bit, and he said, you know, my best friend had her children, 5 grown children, sitting at the kitchen table, all classically trained. She taught them all. And her greatest heartbreak is that her 5 children don't love to read, and they don't love lovely literature. And they said to her in front of him, Mom, you just forced that stuff down us. You just forced us. You never let us pick up anything that we were drawn to. And then we go to college, and we can't even relate to anything that some of those people have read. Yet we preach from the 7 laws, right? Teach from the known to the unknown. but we want them to start with what we know, not what they know or what their peers know. How often have you labeled a child in your class who's sitting at a desk and they're all Pierce kids? And we label it sin. We call it disrespectful. We say they're disobedient. We say they're not compliant. When in reality, have we ever stepped back to think they're exactly where God intended them to be, cognitively, emotionally, and physically, and we're asking them to do something that God never intended them to be able to do? What motivates us when we see these behaviors? Is it our pride? Like, I will have the perfect class. Or is it that little fella? He's got a long way to go, but I serve a God who's not going to give up on him. There is a balance. Some of it is sin. Some of it is disrespect that has to be trained. But I think we're not taking the time to examine each individual child and see where they are. If I'm honest, it's easy to fall into those standards. It's actually, for me, easier to fall into a standard of, is my headmaster happy? Is my principal happy? Are my parents happy? And my husband reminds me all the time, if I get worked up in that state and he goes, well, who's your overall head? And he brings me back to, I wake up every day and go there for the great I am. And I am teaching and loving children that he loves way more than I could ever love. He just wants us to be obedient. So, as we end this section, what's the legacy you're leaving in your classroom? You're leaving one. So what is it? What are the rituals in your class? What are the memories these kids are going to have when they leave your class? What are the senses they smelled when they were in your class? They tasted, they heard, they felt. How do you draw your class into the presence of the Lord? Because I hope you do every single day. Are you laying a feast before them? How do you engage these sensory little creatures who are dying to move and jump and get dirty? And their parents aren't letting them. How are you growing you? How are you growing you? Because here's what I'll tell you. What we model will have a greater impact than anything we do in our classroom. Second P, moving on. Pouring into our Pinterest parents. Pouring into our Pinterest parents. As we partner with them to shepherd. What I've learned over the past few years, I've been blessed to be guided and shepherded as a mom by parents who are shepherding hearts. And in my naivety, I believed if you came to my school or you went to my church and you said the word shepherding a heart or growing kids God's way, that you were involved and that nothing else about your child mattered but the heart. But what I'm learning as I began teaching and conversing more with parents and more closely, they're intimidated by the book, they're discouraged by the book, and they want help with the book. And so something I started a few years ago is I start my first parent meeting with this paragraph that I'm going to read to you. And this very same paragraph I read to the students. I want to tell y'all about a shepherd. We all, the parents and myself, we serve the great shepherd. The shepherd loves his sheep. He develops a close, intimate relationship with his sheep. He wants them to know his voice. He wants them to trust him. He understands the needs of those little sheep better than they themselves will ever know. He defends his sheep against all enemies. He prepares the path for them. He comforts them when they're hurting and they're sad. Shepherding is lonely. It's exhausting. But faithfulness will produce a very fluffy, flourishing flock. And so I tell my parents, that's what our Heavenly Father is doing for us. And for 8 hours a day or 2 hours a day, whatever your program looks like, you get to shepherd those sheep. Parents don't know how to do it, and they want to know how to do it. I began a couple years ago offering. Just if you want to come hang out after school, we'll watch the video together and we'll talk. And as a result, through that, I've learned, and even in my judgment, how can parents not do this? The desire's there. They just don't know how. And they don't know what to do when they're at Target and they threw the icy across the room. And they don't know what to do when they hit their brother at the restaurant and the iPad shattered. They literally don't. How do you go to the heart with those things? And so what I've learned is as we sit there and we discuss these things, even those that are resistant find joy, not in Tripp, not in Christina, but in the freedom that comes with God's word. Share two quick illustrations before we go on to the third. I had a family at the beginning of the year. The mother and father were preparing to separate, and so they let me know that this was going on so I could be prepared for behaviors for the children. And I said, you know, well, that makes me sad, but thank you for letting me be a part of this with you, trusting me with this. And I would just ask that all of our communication still remains with the three of us and that we still meet the three of us. And as we began walking this journey together, and remember it began, they were going their separate ways, but they wanted to teach their son to love the Lord with all their heart and all their mind and all their soul. And they wanted their son to know that Jesus can do anything. And so they began talking through shepherding a child's heart, and we would meet at their house. And one day, my heart was shaking, and we usually know that's the Lord, right? When you're really, really trembling. And I said, they were telling me about all these situations, and they were beautiful, where they were telling their son, I want to be restored, and will you forgive me? And there's nothing you can ever do that will break this relationship. And he said, I realized I can't teach my son that and walk away from his mom. Now, that is worth more than curriculum and perfect obedience. And that's what it's a freedom that we enjoy in pre-K and kindergarten that, unfortunately, my colleagues don't get that privilege. They have so, I couldn't teach a grade past kindergarten. They have so much to do and so much to accomplish. And we have that freedom. Are you willing to stop whatever you are doing to invest in the next generation and in the next generation's kids? All right, my last one, my favorite one. It is my wellspring of life. It is the greatest heritage that my mother left me, and it's prayer. Whenever you are weary and you think you can't go on anymore, you just talk. I teach my students to talk to Jesus all day long. We start our day in prayer. We stop in the middle of things for prayer. I see strife. I go, I'm sorry, are you promoting joy or peace? I mean, are you promoting strife or joy? What does God do if you promote joy? If you promote peace, he gives you joy. He gives you joy. Did you know that? They don't know these things, but they start to repeat them. The other day, a parent told me right before school was out, I do this symbol in my classroom. And it just helps me to keep going and not have to interrupt. And it means iron sharpens iron. They know what it means. We've studied it. And so when I see the wise young man sitting next to a fool, I'm looking at him going, so hopefully he'll use the tools that he has from his head, from his heart, from God's word to help Freddie next to him pull it together. A mom came to me and said she and her husband were fighting. And we all do. So, I mean, I used to pretend I didn't, but we all fight. And so mom and dad were fighting in the kitchen, and their son was standing there going like this. And the dad said, what are you doing? And he said, well, one of you is supposed to sharpen. And I thought, wow. I mean, he doesn't have it all together yet, right? But it's a start. And so that, to me, is more important. This fast food, fast-paced culture exists. The same gentleman last night that told me about this family, he said, I hope you're going to tell them that cell phones are bad. And I said, I don't like them, but I'm not going to win one millennial over by telling him his cell phone is bad. And furthermore, you're mad at your 11th and 12th grade students for grabbing their phone all the time after your great, deep, beautiful lesson, but it's not his fault. His mom and dad bought it. His mom and dad are responsible. When was the last time you had a conversation with the parent about the phone? Right? So these things over here, I want to make it really clear. When I asked Mackenzie Grace to go upstairs and get one of her former dance costumes, she was like, "You are not going to stand in front of those people and tell them that dance is bad." And I said, I'm not. But I'm going to tell them that that dance costume used to be over here at the Pierce Banquet. And then all of a sudden, over time, she got better and she got better. And it took over our family. And we stopped eating at the dinner table at night. And we were dividing and conquering on the weekend. And so we train her. And parents, don't go tell the children that dance is bad, because it is not. And you will not bring them to the banquet by telling them it is bad. Do not tell a first-time mom that Batman is bad literature. Don't do it. Or Fancy Nancy. Take them from their known. And when you do, you can bring them over here to one of my favorite parenting books ever. Let's see if I can find it right here. Big Truths. They'll listen to this if I start over there. Some families can manage multiple sports and multiple activities in their family. Every family has to decide. Give the parents permission to do that, but help them. And when you need to speak truth, speak truth. And when you need to meet them where they are, meet them where they are. I'm going to close. So this is the Pierce Banquet. I love making my family put on rain boots and splashing in the backyard, and my 13-year-old rolling his eyes, but he'll be the first to throw the mud pie. I love reading. I love entertaining. It fuels me up. I love years of Bible study fellowship. It fills me up. I love going on a walk around the park with my colleagues, praying, talking, venting. I love going to Goodwill. Miss Wiggins, this is for you. We have a fourth grade teacher, and her heart is broken because her class does not know what a dictionary is. So I have been on the mission this summer to dig through every Goodwill I can and find her a Webster's dictionary. This is for you, friend. So the brain, I do want you to remember what the brain does. I had some people say, don't tell these early childhood people about the brain. They went to school. But we need to be reminded that brain is not science. It is a creation of the King of the universe, and he designed it to do certain things at certain times. Executive, when we don't engage in imaginary play, and this is a proven fact, you can cite me. Imaginary play on the playground with Legos, with blocks, with dress up, wherever it is, if you don't engage in it, you will not grow executive functioning and you will not grow self-control. That portion of the brain, it stunts it. I think we all have the proof in our classrooms and in our society. These kids can't hold jobs, they're stressed out, they don't know how to manage their time, they're anxious. Because we haven't given their brain the opportunity to grow that. The next generation is at the bottom when it comes to these skills. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the privilege that we have. We might not be in Africa, but we are in a classroom all day long where you entrust your souls to us. And I just pray that when we're weak, you'll fill us up. And that when we're strong, we'll come alongside someone else who needs us. I pray that you would fill our leaders and our administrators and our parents with your wisdom and your knowledge and your understanding so that they can be our shepherd and guide us to be the best teachers that you've called us to be. In his name, amen. So, any questions, thoughts, something you do different? Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is what I do, just because my life, it's organized chaos, but But the way I found now for me is just podcasts. I just listen when I'm driving by myself in the shower. Homegrown Preschooler is a great podcast. Trip has lots of podcasts. Both. Absolutely. And here's the reality, it's this simple. Google executive functioning. I mean, just Google it. But Google fidget spinner and why they make it. And they'll tell you what portion of the brain they're helping. But then science will tell you they wouldn't have needed this had you done what you were supposed to, right? And so I'm not faulting us. I mean, what I'm asking us to do, I think we have a higher calling than ever before. Our parents aren't doing it. I mean, if our classical parents aren't doing it, we're in trouble. Because we can teach them this all day long, but if they're not doing what they need to be doing, then I don't care how far they go. They're gonna hit roadblocks. What else? Yeah. Anybody? Right. Right. Well, and with that, with the fusing of the brain, what the illustration that I like to give when I'm talking other places, I say, would you expect your five-year-old to come to kindergarten, your kindergarten class, remember, they're coming in September, they're excited, they're all the same height, and they all weigh the same. I mean, it's the most ludicrous thing you've ever heard, right? But yet, when you push the same curriculum, the same mode of operation, the same grading system, which I would argue there should not be grading in pre-K and kindergarten, then you are saying, yes, I'm going to tell you exactly where you have to be in May. I mean, that you wouldn't expect them physically or emotionally to be a certain way. The other thing, I think I'm looking over there seeing some of my kids' teachers. Another beautiful thing that you can do is bring our parents who don't know about classical. I'm married to a 250-pound redneck who knew nothing about classical education and who, quite frankly, came from a broken home, raised by coaches and public school system. And when he married me and I told him it was a desire of my heart, he said, well, you can do it in pre-K and kinder, and that's it. But he went, and there was this lady who I treated so horrible, Lisa LaWall, one of my dear friends. And I met her. And can't you see this, Jana? So tell me about your early childhood experience. Where are your degrees from? How much? I did. Okay, her response, oh, this is my first year at Providence. You have a degree in early childhood? No. Oh, my word. So I went home and I told Troy, we'll give her 2 weeks. I mean, 2 weeks. But if I don't see the stuff I know to be true going on, here's what Lisa did. And she and I laugh about it all the time. My first week, I just moved to Spring, Texas. I was all alone. What in the world am I doing? I've entrusted this lady I know nothing about with the most perfect kid in the whole world. And all of a sudden, I'm sitting in Lowe's parking lot, and I look at my phone, and there's this letter about Owen and a picture of him sucking his thumb and his chunky legs on the mat. And at that point, she was the greatest teacher I'd ever met in my whole life. Because she took the time to tell me that my son was unbelievable. And I even had periods of thinking, Troy, do you think she loves him as much as we do? That's what our parents need to feel. My husband, insecure in not knowing anything about the classical background or not even coming to know the Lord till later in life, I didn't make fun of him, but he started reading chapter book. He and I, we were so desperate for children. And so when Owen came along, he started reading chapter books. Thought it was the weirdest, most insane thing I'd ever seen in my whole life. But it's something that brought him joy. By first grade, his teacher started telling us that she wasn't quite sure there might be something going on, but not real sure. Well, I am a special ed expert. I am an early childhood expert. Do not talk about my Owen like that. I call this teacher my semi-sweet chocolate chip. She is so good when she's mixed all together, but every once in a while she's bitter. But that's what makes her beautiful, because she's willing to say those things to me. The next year, we had this beautiful celebration at my school. I don't know if y'all do it, but at the end of the year, we get to sit in the room and hear the teachers talk about our beautiful child and all these wonderful things that they did. And in second grade, and this is God ordained, because Miss Towns doesn't know anything about my family. She knows about us. But she gives an award to my man. And it has a picture of the dad sitting in a chair reading a book. And it puffed him up. He never admitted it. It was a whoa, whoa, whoa. By third grade, Miss Lewis lets us know by the end of the year something is wrong with Owen. And we're going to have to look into it. But you've been reading to him, and you've been reading to him, and you've been reading to him. We come to find out he has Erlen syndrome. He has dyslexia. We force things too early. The wiring in his brain, backwards. $20,000 later, and a lot of repentance, they reprogrammed his brain. And it's a whole nother talk I hope to share one day at a conference, but special needs kids can learn classically. Simply Classical, if you haven't read it, read it. It'll inspire you. Simply Classical. Yes?
Sorry,
no. Yes, I'll tell you in a short version what our day looks like. The kids come in, we have an activity laying out for them. We've gone through different administrations in the last 5 years, so the requirements have kind of changed. So this year, this is what it looked like. It used to be they came in and sat down at a desk and did something. This year they came in, and think about this, the people that you're meeting at the conference, what if I made you come in, sit down at your desk, and start the conference? Hi, Jeanne, I really want to catch up with you. I have a dictionary for you, but you can't. And then they get in trouble. What are you supposed to be doing right now? Unpack your backpack, put your lunch away, get seated, and start your work. Would you want to do that? So when they come in right now, I have something, and look, I do this messy. My principal is teaching me to be neat. So where I would dump 5,000 Legos on the floor, she's trained me to put them on trays. And that is more, but that is more beautiful. And that is good. That is good. You can have, I think you can have fun and it can be orderly. And so that's what I'm learning, is to do it orderly. So they're sitting there and I'm starting their brain with imaginary play. And we've got mama with 10 kids, so she's late, right? You know your families, so you know when it's time to start. And so after that, we transition to circle time. We do everyday math for our calendar, but we also incorporate scriptures and songs. I mean, I think the beauty of our school is that we're allowed to bring who we are, who God has created us, to the table. So do our calendars look a little different? Yes. Are we teaching the same thing? Yes. We transition from that. I personally do Bible first thing just because it's my hope he'll help us all day long. And then after Bible, we have recess. We have a playground. We have a PE teacher that allows us to go to the gym. We come back. We have snack together. And then that morning time, as you all know, I mean, your academics, you do have to hit before 11:15. I mean, it's you don't need to do anything other than that one recess. So we use Math and Focus, and Johnny can spell. And we teach the phonograms. We master. Our goal is we expose them 1 through 70, I believe. And then we're looking for mastery in the 50s. Yes. Now, our school, we have 2 5-day programs all day. Again, another point I'm saying, that's not classical. So how do you make a 5-day, all-day classical? How does that look like your home? In the a school up north, they call their afternoon session enrichment. And when I talked to their enrichment teacher, they go into the woods, picking up sticks, counting the sticks, collecting, we also have a 3-day program. That's what my kids did, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. But I've done tons of research across the nation. You've got your programs across the nation. The ones that are 5-day, all day, it's because we're having to accommodate working parents, right? So they can pay for it. But half-day programs, Providence here in Dallas has sporadic times they go in the day. So they're all diverse. And so that's why I'm saying I'm not here to tell you what your program should look like, because we all have different amounts of hours and days. But if you're not fitting in the stimulation, and I would say if it's not trumping everything else, then really everything else the other teachers are doing is being built on sinking sand. Anything else? Yes. Going against the culture. Okay. So she said, how do you, we can tell them, right? But how do we, again, come alongside them to show them to be countercultural? And we're fooling ourselves if we ourselves don't struggle with it. If I weren't married to such a strong man, my kids would not be in one activity a semester. So here's an example. One of my moms this year, new to our school, I taught her son. She brain is not fused. I don't even think it's close to being fused. And self-control is a huge issue. Lots of behavior problems. Got to a point within a month, our process, we get to train, and then we get to go to our principal and say, help! And then after that, she gets to go to the parent. So I called the mom and was met with complete resistance. You know when you can just tell? And I even went so far as to tell my principal, I think you're probably going to get a phone call. She didn't get it. And we had Harvey, and we didn't have our introductory meetings to explain everything. So she was cold to me, her heart, you know, we just know it. And I kept pressing through. And then finally one day said, okay, elephant in the room, let's talk about it. Well, I'm just offended that you would, hence we started our Shepherding a Child's Heart quicker than normal. She came, she listened. She asked questions. She asked me to come over. And then all of a sudden, to point to what Jean Ann was asking, all you can do is encourage and show them scripture, right? One day she comes, and it's in November, I think, and so how are you doing? And all the moms, and we're just sitting on the floor. My principal and I decided, I have an old little player, and we slide it in. We might need to advance a little bit higher, but we're sitting on the floor to watch this little TV, and she goes, y'all, God really does work. And one of the moms said, what do you mean? And she said, I was at a baseball game last night with Johnny, and I saw him do that stuff to another team player out there on the field. And it was just like Christina said it would be. My heart started beating. I got up. I walked over to the, it's not a cockpit. What is it? Baseball pit. Whatever. Carrie, what is it? Dugout. Yes, and my husband used to play baseball. And she said, Coach, I need you to go pull him from the game. And he did. He didn't really understand what was going on. She talked to him about his heart, and then she made him sit there and watch the rest of the game and cheer on his team. No one supported her there. Her husband was out of town. How can you let your team down like this? Why can't you deal with this later? But we had talked about this, and I said, this is the only phrase I just, when I'm shaking and I'm nervous and I can't, because I don't like that kind of conversation, I just say, oh, the Pierce team is the only thing that matters to us. Just say, the Pierce team is the only thing that matters to us. The Pierce team, our family. And so in saying that, in the scope of eternity, when you stand before the Lord, is he going to ask you if you won the Eagles game with your 6-year-old, or is he going to say, well done, my good and faithful mama? And so she said, it really kind of felt good once I got home. And it's true. Once we start pressing into the Lord and allowing him to do the work, it gets easier and easier. It got so enticing for her, and she was so enamored with classical and Christian education and the care that our teachers pour into the hearts, that in November she starts deciding, I think I'm going to pull my 7th grade daughter from public school and bring her here. 7th grade, a girl, dancing competitively. And if you don't know what that means, it's big. And as a result of what God did through his word, she's no longer dancing. She came to a school where she said, "Mama, the cliques are already formed. I won't have any friends. Probably the only loser cliques left." And I said, "Allison, you got to go home and tell her there's no such thing in God's economy. There's no such thing in God's economy." She struggled the first couple months, and she'd cry and shepherd, "I don't know if I made the right decision. I don't know if I made the right decision." Well, when you can step up and encourage community, do it, even if it's inconvenient. So seventh grade, so happens her son's in my son's grade. I had a pizza party, game night, whatever. Totally out of my comfort zone. She came. She was the first one there, and she was the last one out. Was it worth giving up a night at my house with a bunch of kids that I really don't know what to do with, but they were there? And now she tells you she can't imagine being anywhere else. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Taste and see. You don't have to force it. You don't have to sell it. Yes? The reading? Well, for us, I mean, my goal is 10 books a day. So I've pulled out 10 books. In the beginning of the year, I love it if they all begin with the phonograms that we're working on. We have a beautiful library of literature. But at the same time, I don't bind myself. You could walk in my room and I'm supposed to be reading Make Way for Ducklings, but something that you don't know about took place in my room, and I can think of another story that's going to speak to your heart. So we are given that freedom, and the literature is there. Another thing I just started this year, and I didn't know how it would go, but I'm going to keep doing it. I'm reading a chapter book. And so just my goal with that was to teach attending, and then to see if perhaps I could get them so enticed, even at 5, that when I went, "Oh, that's it, you'll have to come to school tomorrow." And it was really hard. It took probably about 2 to 3 months before they were then, your higher level student was coming in. "Can we see what happened next? Let's see if he got to go on the seesaw or not." Your lower ones are going, "What seesaw?" But that's okay, right? That's okay. Another great thing our school does, we have parent readers. I personally don't care when a parent comes. And because of working parents, I say, if dad's driving by on a sales call and he has 10 minutes and you want to stop by and read, or we have formal, in the afternoon at 2:30, that's a great, and it's amazing. Moms, we do everything, and then when dad shows up to read a book, it's like, hurrah! So, and we have library, and our librarians read to our children and ask good questions. And an idea I copied from Jeanian, who taught kindergarten, she has a big old basket, and she calls it her old favorites. And so when they read this, they all have those books in your classroom they're asking you to read over and over and over again. And so at times they'll say, "Can we get a book from the old favorites?" And just letting them build their own repertoire of literature. Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes, we do. We have lots of C work. We have lots of, this is my philosophy. Yes. And I think it's good. We do dictation. I mean, the first, ideally your first 6 to 9 weeks should be, though, all of those strokes, all of those it's the same thing. You're going to ask your kids to start forming letters, hold a pencil before their muscles aren't ready. And so you really need at least 6 to 10 weeks to just strictly work on growing their muscles, working on pencil grip. I mean, and think about this when you're looking at your writing programs. There are some programs who tell you, you must be at a desk, you must be at a right angle, you must be, you must be, you must be. What I learned from our team lead a couple years ago is she would pull the kids one-on-one for that formal penmanship instruction so that she could watch the motion of the hand and make sure, because we're all teaching cursive, right? So when the parent comes to you and says, "Why did you correct that A? It looks beautiful to me." And I go, "Oh, because see, they didn't start at 2 o'clock, so we can go," we have to educate our parents on that too. So yes, we do. We have a board, we have desks, they're looking forward. Here's what's beautiful about that. You've put me in an uncomfortable position, because yes, we have desks, but here's what's beautiful. I have asked not to have desks, and here's what's beautiful about my leadership. We're going to have desks, but I'm willing to have conversations with you. So that's what I'm encouraging you to do. I don't want you to go back and radically change everything. I want you to examine the beautiful and the lovely things that you're doing and ask yourself, step by step, instead of trying to come up with the biggest and the latest and the greatest, I'm just saying take what you have. How many senses do I incorporate when I teach this? Did I do anything with taste this week? How much imaginary play did they have? So yes, we do, and they do know how to sit at a desk, and they do know how to obey and listen. And there is a time and a place for that, and I am not communicating that it's wrong. I'm asking you to make sure that it fits in with their cognitive development, and it's what's best for them. Because we feel good when they look perfect, right? I mean, I know that, you know, the one Johnny that comes in the one time, because you're purely defined the two times a year they come in to evaluate you, right? That's your history right there. That defines you as a teacher. And Johnny had that day. And what I find about my sinful nature is the minute it's all over and I'm like looking at him all day long thinking, what in the world? And I, like within an hour or so, like I can really even sense that sin or that broken relationship in my class. And I really will stop and say, I have been so short and unkind, haven't I? Yes, Miss Pierce, you have. I was a little bit nervous because I don't know if I did a good job or not. Will y'all forgive me? And if we don't model admitting we fail and we mess up, I'm not proud of this, but when I say the words, they go, are we late again? I'm going to work on that this year. I mean, that was true of this year. I'm going to really work on that this year because that, I don't want to train it's okay to be late. But it was consistent, and I did establish that pattern this year. I'm going to work on it. Fine motor is writing, they're saying it's disappearing. Like I've even read articles that say it's a lost art. Not just cursive, but writing is a lost art. So here's what's happening. In the public school, they're not even going there anymore, right? They're not even teaching cursive. But in our private schools and in our classical schools, we are so hung up on that that we're messing up too because we're not setting them up for success. So I'm having first grade teachers and second grade teachers come to us and say, I can hardly read that. And again, they don't all come to you the same height and the same weight, and they don't all come to you with this, because there are families. My son had strong fine motor because all we did was dig and play and do those things. And the reason I'm more passionate about it today than I've ever been is because I used to be able to succumb to authority and rules, and I still am, don't get me wrong, because I just trusted that parent's at home doing it. But never does a young child enter my home and we bake cookies or we play with Play-Doh or slime's flying through my kitchen and they go, I've never seen this before. And so when I started to realize that kids aren't doing it anywhere, I thought, oh my word, we have a high calling here. We have a high, high calling. And I mean, spider push-ups, right? I mean, you can be comfortable in it. Everybody has a jar of Play-Doh on their table. All right, here's the deal. Before you get free play with this Play-Doh, I need you to roll out all the phonograms that are in your name, put them together to make your name, show it to me, and then we'll go from there. Then what I do is I take a picture of it. So in the back of your head as an educator, you're going, my parents are going to think I'm just playing. My administration's not going to see any concrete evidence. And I don't have anything to prove that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. What I do all day long, I take pictures all day long. And I send them to the parents all day long. Parents this age don't want letters. They want to see the cutest child in the whole world just roll out Sam. That's what they want. And when you give them that, they want more of that. And the more we expose them to that, the more they know they can go to Dollar Tree and get a thing of shaving cream and do that. Do it outside if you have to, right? But send pictures. I just encourage you. And that's coming from a non-tech savvy person. Just text, email pictures. Look what they did today. Look at the joy today. Send them a video. Speaks louder than our words. All right, that's it. Enjoy the rest of your conference. If you need anything, please feel free to come up.